Hello and welcome to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast Team Preview Edition. I'm your host Ian Hartish, ready to talk all things Green Bay Packers. Joining me as always, the one, the only, the great Dwayne McFarlane. What's up, man?
Man, how was vacay, Ian? You didn't really vacay. Like you still kept working, but I know you were at the beach. So like what's the conclusion? Are you sunburned? Are you refreshed? Like what's the outcome?
I'm usually because obviously being a Caucasian person, I can never get too burnt or anything, but like I am one of the more pale people you'll meet, like period. So if like the most pale person's one and like a very tan person is 10, I'm like a two now, Dwayne. So I'm feeling good. We're off the bottom. I got a little bit of red on me. I'm feeling good. I got a flight back out of Newark Airport in New York this afternoon to get to. Not really looking forward to that. But then we'll be back in the lovely Ohio football capital of the world, ready to get back into business. But no, it's all good, man. I would get to sleep in, wake up, podcast with you, and I had a beer open by 1 p.m. How am I going to complain about that, man? It gave me a nice excuse not to work out on vacation because I was like, all right, I did a little work, and now I can get obliterated.
Yeah. The main thing is, Ian, is like you get to sit by a beach, even if you're working. Like I didn't work at all. Like you're a better guy. You're a better man than me. Like I didn't work at all that week. Like I responded to a couple of emails, I think. But, you know, here's the way I said I was working is I was just, you know, constantly drafting, you know, teams under the umbrella,
2700
doing research. I was researching. So
as always with our team preview editions, going to be going through the coaching changes, roster turnover. Did I even say we're doing the Packers yet? I'm not sure. But yeah, surprise, doing the Packers today, NFC North, last week of the team previews. Then we'll get into a nitty gritty quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end. So we'll see if Dwayne can save his Alan Lazard rant until the wide receiver section or not. Get your money out. You can bet now, everyone. All right, looking at the offense. Yes, we did happen to lose the offensive coordinator. Nathaniel Hackett is now the offensive coordinator. Who was the offensive coordinator is now the Broncos head coach, but Matt LaFleur has called plays in Green Bay, and we are expecting him to continue to run the offensive show, of course, alongside Aaron Rodgers. But Dwayne, through 3 years, starting off in 2019, we saw the Packers have the 11th ranked offense in pass play rate and non-garbage time situations, went down to 23rd in 2020, back up to a middling 16th in 2021. Whole time, though, very slow-paced offense, 18th, 32nd, most recently 31st ranked offense in terms of situation-neutral pace, courtesy of the fine folks at Football Outsiders. So, man, Dwayne, in 2020, Rodgers, you know, wins the MVP, Adams goes nuts. This was a below-average offense in terms of passing volume. I think we're going to see this team probably be a bottom 10 offense in situation-neutral pass play rate.
Yeah, last year what we saw, whenever they were trailing by four or more points, 62% drop-back rate, the league average 70%. Then whenever you're in a close situation, they actually threw it a little bit more than the league average, 65%, you know, drop back rate versus 60% for the NFL average. So that's when you're within 3 points. And then when leading, actually did throw the ball a little bit more than what the league average is, 55% versus 51% for the league average. So they're kind of a mixed bag. It's like everything's tied together in this offense, right? Everything is meant. It's very much like the Kyle Shanahan style offense, the Sean McVay style of offense. It's actually those two things kind of put together in a hybrid, but everything is based off of making it look the same, right? Are we running? Are we passing? So a lot more under center type work for Aaron Rodgers than what he's seen in the past. And whenever you run that kind of offense, a lot of times what you're looking for is efficiency, right? It's not so much about the volume of plays. It's like, how do we use the element of surprise? We're not worried about being in a hurry to set up efficient down the field passing, you know, with the attack. And so I think you're right. I think it's probably going to be bottom 10, bottom 12, as far as the number of plays that get ran, the number of pass plays. But when you have Aaron Rodgers, he can make a lot of things look really good. You know, very similar to what we've seen with Russell Wilson, right? In years historically as well, where the Seattle Seahawks just didn't want to drop back and throw the ball a lot, but Russ was still able to keep the offense viable just because he's a badass.
Badass Russ Wilson. Let's ride, Dwayne. Let's ride. Looking at the roster moves, it really just comes down to wide receiver, and you can always catch my team previews over at pff.com, but didn't even realize as I was going through this that, yeah, literally every single guy, skill position player to leave the team, join the team, or get drafted, all wide receivers. So obviously, the main event, Davante Adams, traded to the Raiders in return for first and second round picks in the 2022 NFL draft, immediately then signed a 5-year, $141 million deal. Obviously, you know, Hot take here, Dwayne. Losing maybe the single best wide receiver in the NFL. Not ideal, but we did see some replacements come in. The problem is it's not just Adams that left town. Marquez Valdes-Scantling also took his talents to Kansas City, courtesy of a three-year, $30 million contract. Yeah, they got some outs, but either way, looking at MVS, now really getting paid more like a potential number one or number two, as opposed to more of the field-stretching specialist he was in Green Bay. Equanimeous St. Brown left and signed with the Bears. We did see also David Moore leave and sign with the Bears. Bears just, you know, really going out on a limb, as we'll get to in their episode. Just doing everything they can to surround Justin Fields with talented players. Gotta love the way Chicago's operating lately. Packers did go ahead and sign Sammy Watkins. Very small contract, though. It's a one-year, $1.8 million deal, but just $350K guaranteed, Dwayne. I was reading I think it was Paul Denher. I forget the Packers athletic writer. Excuse me if I messed that up, but in the roster section, like Sammy Watkins, from their opinion, not a lock to even make the week one roster. I think he will, but yeah, truly, $350K guaranteed. That is not the sort of money where you should be able to look at Watkins and just immediately assume he's even going to be a starter, let alone on the roster. Also, a trio of draft picks, most notably North Dakota State wide receiver Christian Watson with the 34th overall pick. You know, a guy I've been a lifelong fan of, Romeo Doubs out of Nevada in the fourth round, and also Nebraska wide receiver Samori Toure in the seventh round. So, Dwayne, not only is Adams gone, we got MVS gone. This is probably, I mean, it's going to be a brand new passing game in terms of the wide receivers we're seeing at play. Bunch of guys with a chance to take over. Out of everyone we just talked about, though, Christian Watson does have the most just investment in him.
Yeah, you get the second round pick. But it's like you said, we'll break them down here in a minute, but it's wide open. Like, my guess is it's just going to be pretty spread out across all of them, you know? But I think Aaron Jones is the guy that we'll need to talk about here in just a few minutes. And I think he could be a big part of this.
Absolutely. Yeah. Similar thing with KC, but once again, we'll save that for the wide receiver section. Let's get a look in at the reigning, defending, undisputed back-to-back MVP, Mr. Aaron Rodgers himself. Of course, we do have former first round pick Jordan Love still sitting there in the QB2 spot. I mean, look, I know Rodgers was quite the public figure, didn't always do himself, a ton of favors with going on the McAfee show every week. You know, for someone that was like, quit talking about me, he also found a way to go out in the media and talk a lot. So, just regardless of how you happen to feel about Rodgers for one reason or another, my God, like even the biggest hater in the world, which basically look at just the entire city of Chicago at this point, no one's going to be able to disagree that we are talking about truly one of, if not the best quarterbacks to play the game, and it's currently in the league right now. Looking at him specifically under Matt LaFleur, though, really, again, you just could be hard-pressed to find a metric that tells you anything otherwise. Last 3 years, 51 quarterbacks with at least 300 dropbacks, first in PFF passing grade, second in QB rating, second in big-time throw rate, third in turnover-worthy play rate, drops down a little bit to 14th in yards per attempt, eighth in adjusted completion rate. I mean, Dwayne, and we'll get to this here, like, there was a time, specifically 2017, 2018, like, we were seeing Rodgers look a little bit more mortal. And I said himself, which was very, very well said, a lot of times down years for me are career years for most quarterbacks, which is true. Rodgers has never in his life been anything other than a great quarterback. Maybe for 1 year he was above average, but I wouldn't even say that. The question is, are we still going to see the same guy in 2022 that we saw in 2020 and 2021? Or do we start seeing it dip back a little bit? Because in terms of fantasy points per game, from 2011 to 2017, never finished worse as the QB9. We did see that QB10 and then QB14 finish in 2018 and 2019, though, Dwayne. And looking at it, PFF's fifth-ranked offensive line, that's great. Aaron Jones, A.J. Dillon, love them. PFF's 31st ranked receiving corps, and I don't think that's an exaggeration or a bad call. This is, I believe, objectively the worst surrounding cast Rodgers has ever had to deal with, and we're looking also at him potentially not having the same sort of volume he's used to dealing with. Can Aaron Rodgers, I believe 38 years of age at this moment, overcome all this, Dwayne? Because again, it's not us saying that Rodgers isn't a great quarterback, and you know, we all know he freaking is, but man, when it's not only you're losing the weapons, but you're also probably looking at more of a run first offense, I don't know how he's going to get more efficient, man. I think, unfortunately, this is probably exhibit A of a fantastic real life quarterback who might be more of an average fantasy signal caller.
Yeah, I think the lack of, you know, weapons is going to be a problem. I will say, you know, back when we saw, you know, Aaron Rodgers really take the step back before, you also still had Mike McCarthy refusing to basically change the offense, right? Even as they lost weapons or as they were transitioning to new ones. And so in this particular scheme, you know, the nice thing for Rodgers is he's going to be very protected by the fact that they're going to use a lot of play action. They're going to do a lot of these different things with motion. They'll do things to try to help create advantages for Rodgers to basically overcome, you know, the lack of receiving weapons. And so I think that's a positive. When you look overall, you know, at Rodgers right now, I've got him, Ian, as my QB 13. I've got him basically at the top of my tier two quarterbacks. I do have Trey Lance ahead of him, you know, because of the potential differentiation that you can get, you know, as a rusher. If Aaron Rodgers still had Davante Adams, obviously he would not be, you know, this low, right? He would be in the tier with Burrow, Brady, Russ Wilson, Dak Prescott. But because of the questions we have around the weapons, I think it's just enough that you got to push him down. ADP agrees as well. You know, over on FFPC, he's going off the board as QB 14. As of earlier today, Underdog going off the board as the QB 13. I don't have a ton of exposure to him. So I've, like, over my last 50 drafts, I've only taken Rodgers a few times. The one thing I do like about him, though, Ian, is when you get him, and like, say you just miss out at quarterback, or you get him as your second quarterback. Like, I've taken Lance, you know, in round 8, and then come back in round 9 and taken Ayuk, and then in round 10, taken Rodgers, and round 11, taken Christian Watson. The thing I like with Rodgers is you do get some cheap stack options, right? Because all the guys that you name, besides Lazard actually, believe this, like, Lazard goes ahead of Aaron Rodgers. We'll talk about that in a minute. But just looking at the options that you can get, you know, you already mentioned the challenges potentially with Watkins, and will he, you know, be on the roster? When I look at this roster, it's hard for me to think that he won't be, like, just based on the receivers. But you can get Sammy Watkins later. You can get Christian Watson around, you know, basically around after where Aaron Rodgers goes.
Tonyan's going late too.
Yeah, Tonyan goes on like round 14 or 15 over on that's on DK. It's right around the same on Underdog as well. And then whenever you look at Romeo Doubs, like, you can take him with your last pick in a 20-round draft. So I think there's a lot of ways that you could potentially stack Aaron Rodgers. And if the offense does come through and it's efficient, you know, it didn't cost you anything.
And again, it's, if Rodgers was in this Tom Brady-esque offense, they're going to push for the league lead in pass attempts, we probably would put him up in that category. But between the weapons and this potential volume issue, you're just asking a lot for him to overcome. I mean, 2020, Rodgers was the QB6 in fantasy points per game, QB17 when looking at expected per game production. In 2021, he was 8th in fantasy points per game, 10th in expected points. So 3 straight seasons of career low rushing marks. Like, we're not going to see him exactly turn that around. I mean, there was a time, man, I remember 2015, 2016, when they were struggling to even find a running back. Rodgers was out there leading the team and rushing more weeks than not sometimes. So just not quite getting, you know, I think that overall QB1 finish in our range of outcomes here anymore. Should still be fine for the real life Packers, which I know is all those fans can and should care about. But yeah, Dwayne, I am in lockstep with you. My QB 13, taking him behind. I agree with Stafford, or I agree with Lance. I'm taking him behind Stafford. I still would take Rodgers ahead of Justin Fields and also ahead of Cousins Carr. Same page there.
Yeah, I have. He's right there next to Cousins and Carr. Honestly, I end up taking Cousins and Carr more. But they're all in the same tier. But yeah, Most likely, I've already got Darren Waller, Hunter Renfro, or Davante Adams on my roster, so it easily swings me to Derek Carr. And then same thing if you've got Justin Jefferson, you know, already on your roster, or an Adam Thielen, or you just, you know, we love Irv Smith. I like setting up the Irv Smith stack. So I actually gravitate more to the other two players depending on the way my roster's constructed. But if I don't have any of those, I don't have any Raiders, don't have any Vikings, those are the opportunities I take where I'm like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and take Rodgers this time, right? I'm not going to take the other two because I don't have any of those stacks set up. And I do like getting exposure. He is the kind of guy that you're just like, well, you know what? No matter what, like, he could probably still make some magic happen. So I don't want to get, like, too overly down on him, but in the same tier that you were just talking about.
He will slide sometimes too. I mean, I want to say on Underdog, he's going in within the first 105, 110 picks, but I got him last week at like 135 or something bonkers. So yeah, I get it. Complete your stacks. He is in a tier with those other guys, but we're still talking about Aaron freaking Rodgers here, yep, Ladies and mostly gentlemen. Looking at the running back room, Aaron Jones, AJ Dillon, and Kylan Hill. Dwayne, I wanted to get to the bottom of this important situation to figure out, you know, are we going to ride with Aaron Jones or AJ Dillon? I think the answer, my friend, is both. Aaron Jones will catch the passes. AJ Dillon getting maybe more of the groundwork this time around. I'm feeling good about this. And I was pleasantly surprised when I went to look at exactly how often do offenses have multiple top 24 running backs in PPR points per game. And over the past 10 years, man, we've actually seen 18 instances of this happen. So an average of about 1.8 teams per season have been able to have not one, but two highly relevant fantasy running backs. Over the past 2 years, the Browns have done it, the 2019 Chargers with Melvin Gordon and Austin Eckler. And yeah, so there have been other teams, you know, Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman with the Falcons, Giovanni Bernard and Jeremy Hill with the Bengals back in the day a little bit. That's kind of what we're hoping for here. But Dwayne, I think my epiphany with the situation, looking more into it, what makes Dylan and Jones so great, I think, at where they're going in fantasy is, this is not like what we talked about with the Browns, where if Chubb or Hunt gets hurt, unfortunately, D'Ernest Johnson is just going to kind of slide in and continue to make this a committee. And we see that a lot around the league. A running back gets hurt and we're like, okay, here we go. Chuba Hubbard about to step in the CMC role. No, he's not CMC. So they continue to use a committee of sorts with some other guys that maybe aren't even on the team at that point in time. But Dwayne, if either Jones or Dylan go down, the other guy is going to be a top five running back the next week immediately, and with the chance to, you know, be a, as the kids would call it, league winning asset as the rest of the season goes on. So for me, Aaron Jones looking like the wide receiver one essentially in Green Bay, but AJ Dillon, man, isn't that far behind. If you look at their 16 games together last year, the snaps were in favor of Aaron Jones, 59% to 40%. Rush attempts, though, Aaron Jones, 183 to A.J. Dillon's 169. And we actually saw that as the season went on. J stands for January, obviously. As the season went on, we did see Dillon almost like start to work ahead of Jones just in terms of the rush attempts. We're not saying to rank him ahead of Jones. We know how important the targets are, and Jones has led the target battle 74 to 30. But, man, Dwayne, like, I just think, again, based on the fact that Dillon is – we know like he has some solid standalone value as like an RB3, worst case RB4. But like, my God, out of a lot of these running backs going his range, like he has similar Tony Pollard upside if the starter goes down.
Yeah. And I think Dylan gives you more standalone, right, than what you get, you know, from Pollard in an offense that we know is going to have to stay dedicated to the run to make everything else work. So I think that's the other aspect of this, right? There's really not a ton of risk, in my opinion, that all of a sudden the Packers are just going to air it out, right? Their roster is just not built for it. Now, obviously, the quarterback's the number one driver, and they have that, and if they need to, they will, but I don't think that's going to be their plan, right? The plan is going to be to stay balanced, to keep both of these backs involved. So, yeah, I like both of them. When just looking at Aaron Jones, his targets per route in games without Davante Adams, 34%. His yards per route run, 2.94 in games without Davante Adams. It's just absolutely nuts.
It's eight. It's like eight games. I mean, it's not the biggest sample size, but it's not nothing.
And those are just the games with LaFleur. Like I didn't include anything where LaFleur wasn't around. So yeah, it is a smaller sample, but eight games is more than what we get typically for splits that get touted, you know. So and we've just seen it, you know, happen multiple times. So I think the upside for Aaron Jones obviously does come through the passing game, as you mentioned. He's also an explosive playmaker. So I mean, it's the archetype we're looking for. Explosive on the ground, catches passes. There's a chance he is, I know you were joking partially, tongue in cheek, right, wide receiver one, but there is a chance that Aaron Jones leads the team, you know, in targets. Now, that would mean, you know, figuring out different ways to get him on the field, because if you're going to split, you know, the snaps, you know, say 55-45, no matter what you do as Aaron Jones, it's going to be hard to be out there for enough routes to put up a Kamara-type season. But if they do figure that aspect out, that's really the upside you're looking at, right? He could be more like an Alvin Kamara. You know, he's just really, if you look at his receiving data points, he's a notch below Kamara and CMC. But sort of like if there are tiers of like the absolute top elite guys, and then there's the next group of really good receivers out of the backfield, Aaron Jones is in it. So I expect him to do really well this season. You know, he's a second round pick right now. I've got decent exposure to him. Love it. You know, whenever he slides, you know, towards the middle or towards the end of that second round, like it's just, you know, it's just an easy click to pick whenever that happens. But I have actually got Aaron Jones right now sitting at my RB nine. And then I have, oops, hang on. Sorry. Gotta open that. That was the, yeah. So I've got Aaron Jones at RB nine. And then I've got AJ Dillon as my RB 27. His FFPC ADP, thanks Fantasy Mojo, is 25. Also the same over on Underdog. And Aaron Jones, oh, actually I have him just, he's at ADP now. Like Aaron Jones has moved up a lot over the last month in ADP. You know, he's moved up probably almost a little over a round, actually, in just the last month, as people have started to really latch on to the fact that he could be the leading passing down option.
I'm with you on Jones RB9, and you put together some nice video clips demonstrating just how different he is, man. I wouldn't put him in the tier below Eckler and those guys. I put him right there in that tier with them based on what we've seen from him as a receiver, because dude, just the things he can do downfield and outside. Like, you know, we talk about how running backs usually have an average target depth, like of negative yards, because they're just catching nothing but screens. That is not Aaron Jones, one of only four running backs during this LaFleur era to average at least 2 yards per route run in the slot or out wide. He can really win all over the field. And yes, I am with you in lockstep as the RB9. And man, those games, like, he really could lead the team in targets. So I went through those 8 games. And the one thing I noticed, Dwayne, there's only one instance of a single player, any Packers receiver, tight end, running back, only one instance of a guy having more than 8 targets in any of those games without Devontae. So you could really tell that Rodgers was far more content to spread the ball around to everyone. But there were 6 instances of a player getting at least 8 targets in those games. Aaron Jones had 4 of them, man. MVS had 1. Jamal Williams had 1. If you want to move it down to 7 targets, Lazard had 1. MVS had another 1. So it's just one of those things, man. Again, based on the sample we have, not huge, but I think it makes sense. Like, even if Jones doesn't lead the team in targets, I still think he has a chance to get triple digits, which for a running back, man, is all you could ask for and more. I mean, is RB9 too low? I think we have him behind the same tier of guys. Like, I struggle to put him ahead of Saquon, Fournette, Cook, like Najee and Henry and stuff. But really, what's the difference between Eckler and Aaron Jones? Like, we're more confident that Dylan, I guess, is going to take away early down stuff, but I don't think Eckler is going to breeze too much past 200 carries anyway either.
Yeah, I think they could end up being really similar, to your point. It's almost like we don't really talk about arbitrage in the second round, you know, but it would be. It's an Austin Eckler arbitrage play. That's really what you're getting. So, I mean, I think it's the perfect example or the perfect comparison to make. If things go right, that's really what it could look like. And here's the thing, like, we've had Kamara have these really big receiving years as well without being out there for 65% of the routes, which isn't probably likely for Aaron Jones, right? But he can get to like that 55 mark. He's typically been around 45% of the time they drop back to pass, he's in a route. If they could get that number to just like 55, I actually wrote an article on this, if you folks want to go check it out, over at PFF a couple of weeks ago, just listing out the top 8 players that I think could be in line for more targets this season than last year, and kind of laid out the logic. And it's a lot of it is based on how many routes you run and how often you're targeted per route run. And so I just basically put together a table that gives you the range of outcomes for really what it could look like for Aaron Jones in this new Packers offense minus Devontae Adams. So yeah, I'm with you. AJ Dillon, the only thing that concerns me with him, and it doesn't really concern me because of where you get him, like his ADP has actually really stayed in check, right? For how aggressive people are after going after young backs. AJ Dillon, I'm kind of surprised, like, he hasn't gone, you know, higher than where we're seeing him right now. He's the 27th back, like I said. My 27th back, he is the 25th back off the board over at FFPC and underdog. So you're still getting him as a high-end RB3, which is a way I think that you need to view him. My only concern, you know, with AJ Dillon is he's just not been an explosive player. His PFF rushing grade was really good though, 90.1, but only 5% of his carries have gone for 10 plus yards or more. Now, some of that does tie back to the type of carries he gets, right? When they give him the ball, he's quite often dealing with a situation where everyone on the other team knows that he's about to be getting the ball. Also, if you're getting the ball down inside the 5, that often means that, and he had 65% of the team's short down and distance, you know, carries. So those are carries with 1 to 2 yards left to go, and it's 3rd or 4th down. Defense has a good idea, right, that you're going to be, you know, running the football. And so in those situations, a lot of times that's coming down inside the 5-yard line, inside the 10-yard line. So you can't break a super long run, right, if there's not a super long run, you know, available to be broken. Yeah. So I don't know how much noise is really in that data point, but, you know, it kind of matches what I feel like I've seen when I watch him as a player I like. But I'm like, yeah, he's just a volume back. He's kind of a plotter, but it doesn't really matter. At the end of the day, his ADP is good. He plays for the Packers. They're going to have to run the ball plenty. And to your point earlier, like, he's going to give you spike week upside. He can move into your flex, especially in best ball in the weeks you don't have to pick it. And if for some reason Aaron Jones does go down, it's like you said, he'll be a top 6 back in the rankings that following week.
Dude is a legit, like, rhinoceros, man, with the ball in his hands, and he can catch it, dude. Like, that was the whole thing coming out of Boston College, what, 8 career receptions or something. A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones each had four games last year with more than 40 receiving yards. How about that? So, yeah, I know Aaron Jones is better and he's going to be out there, but they don't shy away from throwing the ball to Dillon. Like, there is a chance that Aaron Jones maybe has 70, 75 targets, and we're seeing Dillon almost push for 50 himself. I do think it'll continue to be heavy in Jones's direction, but man, Dwayne, I just think having that upside there, having the potential to get 200 plus carries, like from the same time, I moved up Dillon to RB22. Why not take Dillon ahead of Elijah Mitchell, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Miles Sanders, Antonio Gibson, Josh Jacobs, when if you really look harder at those guys, they could also be in multi-back committees. Several of them could be in three-back committees, and several of them have rushing quarterbacks that are going to complicate that thing. None of them were really as confident as I think the offensive situation that Dillon's in. I mean, A.J. Dillon could just straight up have the same role as Josh Jacobs or Antonio Gibson from day one, and his upside is so much higher. Like, let's bet on A.J. Dillon, man. I want to be ahead of the market on this guy.
Yeah, I think you're right. I probably do need to tweak it just a little bit. And I think the guys that you gave, like, those are really good examples of where he's probably at the end of the day in a similar scenario to those guys. Yeah, so it's something I got to look at again. I'm just a little bit behind you with my rank, but that, I mean, the logic checks out, Harditz. You know, and looking at, you know, Miles Sanders, like, he's a guy that I've been thinking about more. And I thought, well, man, I'm too low on Miles Sanders. I need to move him up. But again, like you just said, like, when you really look at the Eagles backfield, like, and we look at the history, right, of the way that that coaching staff likes to handle these backs, do we really think like Sanders is going to be more than like, you know, one out of three players getting the backfield, at least for the Packers, right? We know it's down to two and they want to run the ball. And we know the Eagles want to run the ball too, but you're going to have two other backs probably involved with the Eagles. And oh yeah, you're going to have Jalen Hurts involved too. So it's just, I'm with you. I think A.J. Dillon probably does have more outs. And then if one player goes down, you know you hit big. Whereas with Miles Sanders, if one player goes down, I don't know that we know anything, right? We could just be right back in the same situation the following week. So I think it's a good point.
And also just the same reasons that we want to be higher on Aaron Jones, like Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon are the best, most proven skill position players in this offense. And I think with Aaron Jones, that's a given, and we all understand that. But really with Dillon, I mean, it's always, you know, this is the time of the year we always talk about these two running back formations and stuff. Like, oh, teams are going to use this more, and they never really do. But my God, if there really was a team that has the players, you know, capable enough of actually making it happen, I do think it could be your 2022 Green Bay Packers. Dwayne, I'm going to throw it over to you shortly for the rant everyone's been waiting for about one Alan Lazard. But before that,
I'm going to get up and walk away.
Before that, I want to give a quick shout out to a few sponsors, most notably Manscaped. Gentlemen, all men strive for gold in their life, right? Gold medals, gold watches, gold everything. However, there's a certain type of man who does go the extra mile. He walks with the confidence of an eagle and giggles in the face of danger. He's a big, hairless, winning machine. And when he unzips his pants, he sees platinum. That's right. Manscaped would like to introduce to you their best and biggest ultimate hygiene bundle yet, the Platinum Package 4.0. Manscaped, of course, the leader in below-the-waist grooming. Now trust them with the whole shebang. Join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off and free shipping with the code PFF. Again, that's 20% off and free shipping with the code PFF at manscaped.com. It's time you enjoyed the finer things in life and get yourself a platinum package for your platinum package. Also want to give a shout out, as we mentioned them several times already, to the fine folks over at Underdog Fantasy. Their Best Ball Mania tournament has $10 million in total prize money. And the best part is you just draft your fantasy football team and that's it. No waivers, no trades, no in-season management. Underdog gives you the best score each week of the season and the highest scores at the end of the year when. Now, as we talk about in this pod a lot of times, there are different strategies in best ball versus redraft. But if you have your friends draft coming up here in August and stuff, I really can't recommend enough going on over to Underdog Fantasy. Send $5 in there. You guys can afford it. And guess what? You can actually get a legitimate drafting experience versus going to the, not trying to hate on these companies, but the ESPN Yahoo mock draft room, where let's face it, a lot of people go in there, they pick twice and they forget they entered the damn thing in the first place. Little bit of skin in the game. And maybe, just maybe, you'll win a bunch of money all while becoming a smarter fantasy footballer. So adding to the good news, Underdog will actually double your first deposit up to $100 when you sign up with the promo code PFF. And guess what? If you play just 10 of those dollars using promo code PFF, you get a free PFF subscription. So what are you waiting for? Head on over to underdogfantasy.com or the App Store, play $10 with code PFF, and draft your best ball mania today. And final note, I know in certain states, countries, best ball and underdog, unfortunately not legal there. Shame on those countries, but we still have you covered if you're looking for that PFF subscription. Using code FANTASY, you can get 25% off any PFF subscription. That'll get you all the locked article content, fantasy football rankings, projections, data and grades from the entire 2021 season, upcoming 2022 season. Again, you can support the pod, get yourself a PFF subscription, use promo code FANTASY for 25% off any sub. Alan Lazard, Dwayne, I'll see you in a few.
Yeah, Lazard, look, Ian, let's start with, it's as you always say, hate the ADP, not the player, right? I mean, Alan Lazard right now, it's just getting out of hand, especially over on underdog. He's going pick 86 now. Like, he just keeps climbing. I mean, he's going ahead of Kadarius Toney, going around the same area, you know, as Brandon Ayuk. Like, I know it's not that huge of a deal, but Christian Kirk. I mean, these are guys that have actually done something, you know. Now Lazard does play with the Packers, I get it, but newsflash everybody, Alan Lazard has been playing with the Packers for the last 4 years, and Davante Adams has by far obviously been really all they've had. And it's not like if Alan Lazard was any good, like Aaron Rodgers just would have said, nah, I'm not throwing to you, I'm only gonna throw to Davante Adams. My biggest beef with Lazard is if he was going to do something with Aaron Rodgers really big, like, we would have already seen him do more. I'm not saying he would have been the target share leader, right? Yeah, you have Davante Adams. So here's the way I look at it. You know, Ian, you've got Davante Adams going to the Raiders. What does everybody say? What's going to happen to Davante Adams' target share now with the Raiders?
Down? If anything, it's going to stay the same. But yeah,
it's going to go down. Why?
We got better players there, Dwayne.
Because you have two good players that are going to play there with Hunter Renfrow and Darren Waller, right? So the reverse of that is he was just playing with Alan Lazard, with a good quarterback. And so now it's like, you know, on one side of our mouth, we all acknowledge it, right? Yeah. Look, it's going to be tougher for Davante Adams to keep that high target share. It's probably going to come down some.
But why do you have that high target share in the first place?
Alan Lazard. Exactly. So it's just... it's mainly that, man. But then, you know, I did the breakout study, just going back and really looking at, you know, these receivers that have historically broke out, and, you know, what are some of the things that we want to be looking for? Especially the easiest thing to do is look is have you actually produced a top three fantasy finish, you know, before, meaning, you know, at least a wide receiver 36. Alan Lazard, obviously, we know he's never done that. We've had a wide receiver 5 season from Alan Lazard in year 4, which was last year. He put up 143 PPR points. Now, he didn't play all the games, but it wasn't good. Right, his best PFF receiving grade that he's put up in his career has been wide receiver 6 worthy. His best targets per route run put up over his career has been wide receiver 6. Wide receiver 6, folks, not a wide receiver 4, not a wide receiver 3, a wide receiver 6 worthy. He did have 1 year, Ian, where he put up a 1.74 yards per route run, which would be good enough for a wide receiver 3 mark. I'm just concerned. Look, it's about the ADP. If Alan Lazard was an 11th round pick, I would love it, right? But where you're having to take him right now and what the other things you're having to pass, I know we talked about a couple of the receivers, but you're also passing a lot of good backs that go in that range. If you're playing in best ball, there's a ton of good quarterbacks and everybody's already drafted one by then, and you're trying to figure out, you may still be trying to figure out your starter or who your next quarterback is going to be on your roster. And they're just players that we know are really good. Whereas I don't think with Lazard, like right now, his price actually matches you know, what his ADP is. And again, it's just consistently climbed. So I don't know if it's going to keep going, but we've seen these sort of players in the past, like, and half of them have been for the Packers. How many players have we tried to jam? Do you guys remember Geronimo Allison? You guys remember Marquise Valdes-Scantling 3 years ago? Like,
what
we
about
all
the real one,
up?
Dwayne? What about, oh my God, the guy that skied over Patrick Peterson.
The guy that what? The skied over Peterson?
Yeah, the game versus the Cardinals. What was his name? Jeff Janis.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We've been doing this for forever, of trying to jam these Packers receivers up higher. And I know everybody says, well, Lazard's played with him a long time. Aaron Rodgers trusts him. If Aaron Rodgers trusted Alan Lazard, he would have already had a better targets per route run. And it's where targets per route run really helps us, because we can get rid of any static, right? Okay, Lazard was hurt. He only played half this game, or he only did this. It's just basically, okay, you were on the field, dude. What did you do when you were on the field? And it never did amount more to, you know, what would typically be associated with a wide receiver 6 in fantasy. So again, it's just the ADP thing. I have 0 shares of Alan Lazard in 50 drafts. I do want some, but he's going to have to, it's going to have to be a draft where he slides like a round or two. And if I did it, I would probably immediately try to hammer Aaron Rodgers, you know, with the next pick if I could, just so I'm like, okay, if I am wrong and I get like this one bullet, I get to fire right on Alan Lazard, like it's going to be on the team where I have, you know, Aaron Rodgers. I got to give him one positive. You know, I have to give the whole story. Now, this is a very limited sample size, only 103 routes in Lazard's career without Davante Adams on the field. Okay. Normally the cutoff for these things is 200. So I'll just put it out there. But in that 103 routes, targets per route run, he did get a 20%, which is by far better than anything else I just listed to you. And his yards per route run were at a 2.86. Similarly, MVS, only a 13% targets per route run and a 1.47 yards per route run. So we can actually say that in the games without Davante Adams, Lazard actually did step up more than what MVS did. So that would be the positive that I can throw out there. Again, I just don't want to draft him at ADP.
We saw a Saints game. A lot of people holding their hats on that. There's our one game sample of Lazard making some big things happen. I went back through, tried to watch, you know, basically all of his career explosive plays. And okay, he's good at the catch point. I think this is like the most severe, you know, you're betting on Albert O because he has such great underlying metrics. Like this is like the anti Albert O. We don't have any metrics that tell us that Lazard is going to work out other than it's Matt LaFleur and Aaron Rodgers, and they're going to put up points. And it seems like Lazard is going to be the guy. Not only is Adams gone, MVS is gone too. And what they replace him with, Christian Watson, one of the more toolsy players that looks almost more like a replacement for MVS than anything, at least in year one. Maybe Dobbs, maybe Samori, whatever the seventh rounder guy's name is, maybe they can step up. But man, Sammy Watkins, who again could make the team just by virtue of looking at one of the just weakest wide receiver rooms in the league, but just 350K, it does seem like Lazard deserves to be projected for about this. And he's going, I looked at our PFF projections and they actually have him in lockstep, I believe, ranked as the wide receiver 41. Now those are just projections. And I think the one really great point you made there, Dwayne, amongst many, but looking at, it's not so much the tier of wide receivers that I think Lazard is ridiculously misplaced. Now I'm with you. I don't think I've gotten a share of him yet. I'm scooping up. If I am getting a wide receiver around that point, I'm almost always getting Chris Olave at this point. But if we want to talk about Lazard versus Tyler Lockett, the Tyler Boyds, the Ayuks, Chase Claypools, Kenny Galladay's, Christian Kirk's of the world, it's not egregious, but it's more so the point at the draft. Like I want Trey Lance over Alan Lazard at that point, because I think there's just such a better upcase scenario. And even some of the tight ends, you know, looking at Dallas Goedert or Kareem Hunt, who we've talked up a lot, Tony Pollard, these are all guys I'm probably going to be taking over Alan Lazard more times than not. But Dwayne, I could get the one thing out of my head that we like to bring out for every player. Could we be looking back and regretting not taking Aaron Rodgers, number one wide receiver in round 8 or 9? And I think the answer is yes, we could regret that. I'm not saying we will, but just looking at it, the ADP is bad, but this is still one of the cheapest projected number one wide receivers in all of fantasy. Basically on Underdog right now, there's only 7 teams that have their number one highest ADP wide receiver at wide receiver 36 or lower. Drake London with the Falcons is wide receiver 36. Michael Thomas, wide receiver 38. Alan Lazard, wide receiver 41. Burks is 42. Kirk, 43. Tony's 44. And then we got the Patriots guys down in the 60s. So it is high, Dwayne, but I think we're talking about Aaron Rodgers, number one wide receiver here.
Here's the thing. We get into challenges, and even I've done this in the past, like, cause you know, I'm huge into projections. I love going in and studying every little detail and like doing, you know, each team and working through them. And one thing that I've noticed, you know, historically, like where I can really make a misstep is when I run into a situation like this, I'm like, well, I got to project somebody to be the number one receiver. The talent profile tells us Alan Lazard is probably not what we normally think of as a wide receiver one. So what you're saying could be true. He could be the wide receiver one on the Packers and he could have a 17% target share. Yeah. Because they just spread it around everyone. In fact, I would say if I had to like put a chip down, like they, you know, somebody came to me, Girl Scout comes to the door and says, how would you like to bet on the Packers, you know, offense this year? Your house is at risk. There's no way I would project Alan Lazard as, oh, I'm going to put it all on Alan Lazard. What I would say would be nobody's going to get to 20%. Nobody's even going to get a 20% target share. You're going to have Lazard at 17%. You're going to have Sammy Watkins at 16%. You're going to have Tonyan at 15%. You're going to have Aaron Jones at 16%. It's just going to be a lot of guys where it's just spread out across them. And so for me, I would much rather take, you know, a Watkins later. I would much rather take, we already talked about Aaron Jones. Like, we both love him in the second round. I would much rather put, you know, a chip on Tonyan later. I would even rather take Romeo Doubs in the last round. Now, again, that's in a deep draft, folks. Probably not your home league. That's like a 20 round or an 18 round draft where you would do that with Doubs. So it's just, again, it's just the ADP. You know, I like a player that I love way more than Lazard. Like, just give me Tim Patrick, you know, for the Broncos, right? Probably going to be a similar offense where it's kind of spread out like what we just talked about. But Tim Patrick actually already has shown that he can do it. And there are enough questions with the Broncos pecking order. We could be surprised and he could be the number one. And his talent profile actually suggests he's already really, his underlying profile is that of a wide receiver two. Yet he's had two wide receiver four finishes. So that it all really does come back to ADP. It's like when I get there and I'm looking at Lazard, it's like I just can't ever click on him. There's just too many other names there that I want. And to your point, a lot of times it's not even about the other receivers. It's just about the fact that there are other players I want there, period, whether it's quarterback, tight end, whatever.
All right. I think we've pretty much covered Lazard, but one more note. We got to say it. The Aaron Rodgers quote, he has, Lazard, been our dirty work guy for most of his career here. Now he's getting an opportunity to be a number one receiver. So I'm not worried about him stepping at all. I'm not worried about him at all stepping into that role. I don't know. It's not like Rodgers is straight up saying like Lazard is our number one receiver. It kind of teetered around a little bit there.
But what I will say, I think that is a positive just because we've known Aaron Rodgers so long, right? And we've been around him. He's also not afraid to just say something bad about a player, you know, I mean, or just basically, you know, be super vague and act annoyed at a question. So, I mean, and not that we want to overread into narratives, but I think, you know, that's about as kind as it gets, in my opinion, from Aaron Rodgers. You know, I mean, obviously he's giving Davante Adams like glowing, you know, reviews, but that's about as strong as I think we could expect. So that's actually a positive, in my opinion. Again, I just don't think Alan Lazard has the talent profile to unlock, to pop the top on a 25% target share. But it is there. It is there for the taking, you know, so it's back to Lloyd Christmas, Ian. You're saying there's a chance.
Where do you think Lazard would fall to? Again, he's going about wide receiver 40, wide receiver 41, an underdog right now. If the Packers sign one of Julio Jones, Will Fuller, or T.Y. Hilton,
he'll fall like three rounds. He's very fragile. They could sign anyone. They could announce Ian Harditz joins the team tomorrow, and Lazard's target and Lazard's ADP is going to fall. That's the problem with Lazard right now. We're probably at peak season for Lazard's ADP because typically this is where this type of profile moves up to seventh, eighth round, right? And it usually starts to cap. Like we saw it last year with Marquez Callaway, right? For the Saints, you know, he kind of got up into this range. We've seen in the past Geronimo Allison, MVS, even from this offense, get in that round eight, nine range. So I don't think he's going to climb much more. In fact, like Lazard could just be one of these players with no news, you know, as more casual fans start drafting, you know, maybe he drops down around, right? And then if you're in a draft and he drops around past ADP, now it's all of a sudden like, okay, fine, I'll grab a share of Alan Lazard.
Rest of wide receiver room again, Christian Watson, Sammy Watkins, Romeo Doubs. Don't forget though, Randall Cobb, also Amari Rodgers, hell, even Malik Taylor in the mix as well. Sure seems like Christian Watson, because of the draft capital and just because of his skill set. I mean, 6'4" with the sort of speed that he has, should be out there on the field sooner rather than later. With that said, we have seen, you know, Rodgers and the Packers have their issues with these rookies. Quickly, though, for those not super familiar with Watson, this is what Mike Renner and our PFF draft crew had to say about him in our 2022 NFL draft guide. Where he wins, flexible athleticism. Most 6'4" receivers struggle mightily to drop their hips at the top of routes to create the precision necessary to gain separation in the NFL. That's not the case with Watson, who explodes in his cuts like a man much smaller. What's his role? Project X. While it's all there physically to be a number one in the NFL, there are still many aspects of the receiver position where Watson is underdeveloped. He'll be a vertical threat out of the gate with hopefully more in time. Where he can improve, ball skills. With a 13.3% career drop rate and 30% career contested catch conversion rate, Watson has left a lot of yards on the field at the collegiate level. The question becomes, is this something that one can even improve once, even hope to improve once they get to the NFL? Found a tweet from our lovely friend of the show, JJ Zacharyson, aka late round QB. This was the part, Dwayne, because I was thinking going in, why are we so much higher on Sky Moore than Christian Watson, other than us believing right now that Sky Moore is the better player? In terms of the situation, you would think that they should be far closer. I know they aren't super far apart in ADP right now, but maybe Watson could be just a cheaper version of that. From JJ, here are the non-Power 5, non-early declaring wide receivers drafted in round two since 2011. Anthony Miller, Zay Jones, Aaron Dobson, Titus Young, Andy Isabella, Dwayne Eskridge, Brian Quick, and now Christian Watson. That's horrendous. And to be fair, Dwayne, there
like
are
half
a lot
of those are from his school, right?
Pretty much.
Wasn't Eskridge from there too?
I don't think so. Was
it? Or am I thinking of the wrong? Oh, I'm thinking of Sky Moore. Eskridge was from Eskridge and Sky Moore. And there's another receiver that was before that. That was Corey Davis.
Yeah, there we go.
Jeez, like freaking wide receiver factory.
So looking at Christian Watson, man, I have him 57 right now. I take Jahan Dotson ahead of him, Tim Patrick ahead of him, even Juju Smith-Schuster. I know he's going like 30 picks ahead for most people's drafts, but
Juju's way ahead of Christian Watson. As much as we bag on Juju, it's a quick side note on Juju. You know, when you're drafting as much as I am right now, like I've softened some on Juju because here's the thing I'll say. The profile is deteriorating, but at the same time, at his age, like he has had the two top performances, he plays for the Chiefs. So I'm still way under market, like on, you know, my exposure to Juju. I think I have him on 3 teams out of 50. So, I mean, I'm not even like at a 10%, you know, on Juju. But when he falls past ADP, I'm just grabbing my exposure. And I'm not, he doesn't have to go a whole round later. I'll take it like 6 spots later. But as far as Watson goes, I've got him ranked ahead of Alan Lazard. Like if I had to pick one player from the Packers offense, I still would put my chip on Watson. I know those data points aren't good, but I feel like I've seen Lazard for 4 years. So I already know what he is. Like if he was good enough, we've seen Aaron Rodgers spread the ball around before. Like he's had Jordy Nelson and, you know, Devontae Adams in the past. Plus, you know, we've seen him with Greg Jennings and all these different, I mean, we've seen Rodgers support 2 and 3 weapons multiple times in his career, never did that with Lazard. So for me, if I get to take one receiver from the Packers, even if you told me like I didn't even get to pick where the ADP was, like I just had to choose one player from the Packers, it would be Christian Watson. So now the fact that I get him later than Lazard makes it even that much sweeter. Now I will agree that it's a boom bust pick, right? It could be a complete waste of pick and you're having to spend it right now on underdog. You're going to take him in round 11. Probably round 10, 11. He's one ADP of 116 over there. So, I mean, end of round 12 would be 120. So you're taking him in the 11th, 12th round. So there's a lot of other things that you can like in that range. So I'm not overexposure, but definitely mixing in Christian Watson.
I just hope he starts, man. I can't see.
Well, I hope he starts. Yeah.
Watkins is becoming such a Carlos Hyde type guy. He kept Bateman on the bench for too long last year in Kansas City. I know Mecole hasn't really worked out, but we had to watch Watkins go over there. And man, like just how does this even happen with Sammy Watkins, man? Like how does someone that let's see as a 22-year-old in the NFL with Tyrod Taylor as his quarterback, Sammy Watkins goes ahead and goes for 1,000 yards. 9 touchdowns. Again, 22 years old, Tyrod Taylor, 9 touchdowns, 8 touchdowns in 34 games with Patrick freaking Mahomes. I know he was number one in Buffalo. That's 34 games, and they paid him more money per year than they were paying Travis freaking Kelce. Man, with Watkins.
Were off to the races after that season with Watkins. I was like, oh, man, this is going to be good.
Man, like, okay, that version of Sammy was fine, but this is – it's one of those things, man, like him and Juju, I think we're always like, well, we saw it once and a lot of guys, we've never seen it. So to that point, they do deserve some benefit of the doubt, but my God, man,
a new t-shirt. Well, we saw it once.
Which is Juju's like 19 Smith-Schuster on the back. We saw Sammy play in Baltimore. I'm still pissed at him for not catching that beautiful lob from Lamar where he just stopped running in the end zone. Like, this dude is so washed. I know he's been hurt. And you can look back at the LaFleur year with the Rams and even, his connection, I think it was Vrabel or someone on the coaching staff with the Bills that carries over as well. I just, every time I draft, even though I have drafted some Sammy Watkins, when he's going in the freaking wide receiver 70 range, it never feels good to him.
Yeah. Look, I've got Watkins exposure, on my Rodgers teams. As you get later in the draft and he slips, at least to your point, we have seen it. Even in more recent years, even though he hasn't come through with fantasy finishes, like we've still seen a wide receiver 4 worthy targets per route run. We've still seen a wide receiver three worthy yards per route run. Now this last year, we definitely didn't get that. And with Sammy, I don't know how much of it is, he does stay dinged up a lot, but I don't know how much of it also is just like how bought in is he into all this? I don't know. Like, you know, we can't know. And it's not, I'm not really looking to judge that aspect of his game, but that's just kind of the narrative that, you know, seems to follow around Sammy Watkins, that he still probably could have been a really good receiver, but you know, this happens, man. Like sometimes people get into a profession, like he can't help it. Like he's a top end elite athlete, but he may not love football. I mean, and that's nothing against Sammy Watkins. People do this all the time in life, right? You get into something and you may actually be really good at it. And you're like, oh, I mean, I did it. You know, I was in a role that, you know, was really good. It like fit me. I worked for a great company, but at the end of the day, I was like, you know, I just don't know that I want to do this. Like, I don't want to give all my life to this job right now, at least. And so it's just one of those situations where Sammy may be dealing with something similar, but at the end of the day, like all people really care about here is like, will you take him at ADP? Fine. If you're getting him like round 15, 16 of a draft, a lot of home leagues, Sammy Watkins not even going to be drafted, right? But it's this is definitely one that this is a huge storyline. That this is the storyline that we have to follow for, you know, the Packers training camp is what's happening with the, you know, wide receiver depth chart. We're assuming I'm going to go ahead and assume Lazard's out there all the time, right? But what does this look like with Sammy Watkins versus Christian Watson?
It could be a situation where Lazard's like the only full-time receiver.
Yeah, and the rest rotate because you could have Cobb rotating in. You've still got Amari Rodgers, yep, who they took in the fourth round. Was it fourth or fifth round last year?
Third.
Yeah, third. Was Amari a third?
He was a third, man.
Wow, yeah. So, yeah, there. I think there's, to your point, honestly, it could be that for the whole receiving core. It could be all of them, like at a max of 80% of the routes. I am going to go ahead and assume that Lazard's going to lock down 90% of the routes just based on the rest of the room. But yeah, this is the big story to watch through camp.
And yeah, I wanted to end this wide receiver talk with just like, okay, we're positive we're not sleeping on Cobb or Rodgers here, but I just think they're probably going to rotate in the slot. And this is an offense that ranks just 21st in dropbacks, featuring at least three wide receivers under the LaFleur tutelage kind of. So they're content. I'm not sure if they still have fullback, I think. They also use multiple tight ends plenty of times. So good on that. Again, we're talking at the end of the draft. If you want to throw a little Randall Cobb out there, you know, no one's going to come knocking. I hope that.
And I would only do it if you have Rodgers. Right. Yeah. If you have Rodgers, fine. Throw Randall Cobb out there in you know, round 20 or, you know, around 18 over on underdog. Then I think it's fine.
All right. Tight end season. We got Robert Tonyan, Mercedes Lewis, Josiah DeGuara also on the squad. Tonyan suffered a season ending ACL tear in that week 8 game last year without Davante Adams against the Chargers. Just 1 year after Tonyan, he is the only guy to ever do this since targets began being tracked in 1992 with a minimum of 50 targets. He had more touchdowns than incomplete targets in his direction. 12 touchdowns, 6 incomplete targets, Dwayne. Again, no one's had like a plus one or a plus two. He had a plus 6 somehow. Touchdowns versus incomplete targets. Now you watch those. He's a good athlete and everything, but you do see a
trains with George Kittle, Ian. Trains with George Kittle.
Wow, my bad, man. That changes my entire worldview at this point. But you look at him, and there's a lot of Dalton Schultz there, I think, where it's like, oh my God, why is there no one within 15 yards of this guy like catching the pass? Or he's just, you know, I'm not gonna come out here and say Robert Tonyan's like a top tier tight end athletically, but you know what, when Aaron Rodgers is your quarterback, you don't necessarily need him to be. With that said, man, again, 12 freaking touchdowns in the year 2020. They come back with the same offensive staff, the same roster. What the hell happened? We popped off. We had 52 yards and a touchdown in week 2. We had 63 yards and a touchdown in week 7. Robert Tonyan did not even surpass 10 receiving yards in any of those other games, man, before he got hurt. We had something named Dominique Daphne lose, like playing legit tight end reps in games, and Tonyan could barely even clear the 50% mark. Like, this is my concern, Dwayne, with your boy Albert O, that even when Nathaniel Hackett had a high producing tight end like Robert Tonyan, he was still playing him alongside a bunch of Jags. And look, I understand Tonyan, and I'm sure this will be the case with Albert O as well, will be the leading receiver out of this group. But it just seems like the year that Tonyan had is what we need to bank on, which is insane efficiency, the likes of which the world has basically never seen, and him making the most out of around 60 targets, because no individual tight end with the Packers has reached even 60 targets in a single season since LaFleur took over. They're 23rd in targets overall. So I think he's in the group. I have him tight end 14. I think he's with the Irv Smith, Dawson Knox, Tyler Higbees, and Gerald Everett. I haven't gotten a ton of him, though, unless I have Rodgers, because I really want most of those guys, specifically Irv Smith, ahead of Tonyan, more so because I don't trust him to be on the field. It does sound like his ACL recovery is going fine. I'm not expecting him to miss much, if any, time to start the year. So that's good. And hey, Dwayne, you know, he did it once. He did it once. And then we can have like Smith-Schuster on one. We can have Tonyan on the other one, like Evan Engram. This could be a $1 million idea, man. But how do you feel with Tonyan in the course of this late round group? I would take him, I think, ahead of David Njoku and some of these other guys.
It's a tier. And so if I've got Rodgers, I'm much more likely to take Tonyan. Just like if I've got Justin Herbert, I'm much more likely to take Gerald Everett. You know, the Packers do have a pretty good schedule overall on the season. You know, there's going to be a decent amount of shootouts they're going to be involved with. So by taking Tonyan, if you've taken any of the AFC West, NFC West guys up top, like the same kind of thing we talk about there, you know, hey, you're just end up stacking a bunch of guys that are good players on good teams. They're going to have shootouts all season long. Tonyan is kind of similar, not quite like in the same range as those players. So I do like, you know, throwing him on, you know, the roster when I can, but I'm not like over the market on exposure or anything. And I think to your point, like the big thing for Tonyan, it'll come down to can he score the touchdowns, which it's the same for a lot of these guys. We've had that conversation, you know, this is team 28 that we're on now, or 29 that 29. We're on now.
Look at us.
Yeah. 29. And like every time we get to the tight end section, not every time, because we have some that are elite, but 50% of the time, what are we talking about? We're talking about touchdowns, and we're talking about how the tier is pretty flat. So I let other things, you know, kind of help me determine when I want to take Tonyan versus, or, you know, sometimes just the other guys I like go and I need my second tight end, and I don't hesitate then. I just take him, you know, because, you know, the board basically dictated what was going to happen, but he's not a player I'm going out of my way to roster.
And that's why I see some people in our community just really hanging their hat on one of these late round tight ends. And that's one of the lessons I've learned, Dwayne, because that was me several, you know, even not a little bit last year. I guess we were talking a little too much about Anthony Firkser and Adam Troutman. And by we, I mean myself. I'm not trying to throw you under that bus. Before that, we had the Chris Herndon year. But yeah, it's like, even though the late round tight end pool looks deep, and I actually do think it's in a better overall state this year than it has been in past years, but recognize that we're playing a game with these touchdowns. So especially if you're like Dwayne and I playing a bunch of best ball tournaments, have exposure to all these guys, stack them with the guy. And definitely if you're in a redraft league and you're only drafting one team, like, do not be content with Robert Tonyan as your only tight end out there. You should be trying to get, I would say, do you have kind of a line you draw, Dwayne, where like you definitely want this guy, like it's Zach Ertz, right? But he's been going a little bit higher.
Yeah, so Ertz is the line, I think, for the last true starting tight end. If you just want to be like, hey, I know I've got one, and he's I have him at tight end 9 right now. And then after that, it just gets kind of messy. As much as I love Albert O, like, I know that there could be potential challenges there. You're betting on the talent profile. Pat Freiermuth, we've talked about, a lot of mouths to feed, but a younger player. Dawson Knox, you know, plays in an ascending offense with the Bills, a great quarterback, but other mouths to feed. He hasn't necessarily shown us anything as targets per out run. Irv Smith, like, I think those guys deserve to be next, but Zach Ertz is the last one in the group. So the way I'm handling these, if I draft a Kelce, Andrews, Pitts, Waller, then I'm coming back and I'm likely grabbing one out of Irv Smith, Gerald Everett. I'll even throw Hunter Henry, Robert Tonyan could go in that group, Tyler Higbee, like that. It's kind of that group. I'll grab one of those. If I don't get, you know, one of the top tight ends, like say, like I get to Zach Ertz and he's gone, I'm usually drafting 3 in best ball. Guys, this is not redraft. In redraft, I still would just draft one and play the wire, right? I'll take a shot on one. If you decide you're in a deeper league, you want to take a shot on 2, great. But most likely in home leagues and stuff, you're just going to take one and then you'll play the wire if you need to. But over in best ball, so on Underdog, DraftKings, all of these, if I don't get one of those, you know, a tight end by Zach Ertz, I'm typically rostering 3. But by not having one, you've also left yourself open to spend picks right on other positions. So you've got, you know, an extra pick later to look at taking a third tight end. And really my rationale behind it, you know, is because of what we talked about. Basically, you got random variants going on every week. You know, you just basically need like 3 bullets in the chamber to have a chance, you know, for one of them to score a touchdown for you. The other thing I look at, obviously, and you heard the names I gave, a lot of it I'm just prioritizing. Well, just give me the divisions that are going to shoot out, you know, and maybe I get lucky because, you know, in the shootout, oh, Gerald Everett caught a touchdown. You know, so that's the way I'm handling it.
Quick recap, Dwayne and I both have Aaron Rodgers as our QB 13, and Okay, before you yell at whatever PFF graphic says that Rodgers is at QB 13, like, go draft a bunch of them then, because that's where his ADP is. It's I haven't seen hardly anyone have him ranked any higher. Like, the preemptive
strike from Harditz for what's going to happen on social.
I just get tired of this when it's like, you know, sometimes we're yelling at the straw man, Dwayne, but some of these people that are just barking about the rankings, like, have you just never played in a fantasy football tournament this summer? Probably not, because that's why you're yelling about it in the first place. But yes, QB 13, which we gave plenty of reasons why. Love Aaron Jones, both of our RB9s, and AJ Dillon. Want to be ahead of consensus on both, fully expecting them to really be the 1A and arguably 1B, just overall pieces of this offense, trying to get them the ball. At wide receiver, don't hate the player, hate the ADP, and Alan Lazard's ADP is too damn high. Christian Watson going several rounds later seems like the safer bet. And if you have Aaron Rodgers on the squad, don't be afraid to throw some darts later. But yes, overall moral of the story with this offense, not really expecting any one player to replace Davante Adams, because how could they? And looking again at what the, again, 8-game sample, not small, but not huge, but not exactly small either. If you look at it, you're just seeing Rodgers spreading that ball around more than ever, expecting him to continue that, which, hey, for someone like Robert Tonyan in the late round tight end game, maybe he'll catch the touchdowns, maybe he won't. It's worthy of a late round dart. Just don't get too carried away. But I think the good moral of the story here, Dwayne, is really for everyone other than Jones, and it's starting to get to Dillon, at least to an extent, you don't have to get too carried away with anyone because they're this cheap and an offense still led by Aaron freaking Rodgers.
Yeah, so the same way Aaron Rodgers is going to spread it around, that's all I'm doing in drafts, just spreading it around a little bit on some of those guys in the late rounds. The only other thing I would say, you know, with Watson, he is going to be boom bust. So I don't know we'd necessarily call him safer than Lazard, but he's cheaper from an ADP standpoint, but he could still give you a complete zero. So a player that I'm much more likely to take than Alan Lazard, but also fully embracing the fact that, like, wow, this could hit, but you know, there's a 70% chance I just get a complete whiff, you know, out of Christian Watson. But when you're playing best ball, you're playing something like underdog, you're trying to win $2 million, right? You know, you can't do this with every pick. In fact, I kind of hate it. And I feel like now everything's devolved to, well, when you're right, this is what you get. I'm like, well, we could say this about every player. Like, when you're right, like, what is like this optimal scenario, the, you know, for each one of these players? But at the end of the day, like, there is just more upside, I believe, in Watson's game, because it's just the unknown, right? We've seen that Lazard has not been able to put that big targets per route number. You know, maybe Watson can surprise us with it.
And again, just where he's going in the drafts, I don't think Lazard's receiver ranking is that egregious. You can talk yourself into it, but then once you start looking at guys like Trey Lance and kind of like the borderline RB2s, the upper tier RB3s, I just want a lot of those guys ahead of him, and guys like Chris Olave, Tim Patrick, who continue to be really undervalued, in my opinion. Just wait a couple rounds.
It's a true test. Like, Alan Lazard and MVS this year, the perfect example of, do you think targets are earned or not?
Yeah.
If you think targets are earned, you probably shouldn't draft Lazard or MVS unless they slide past 80.
But basically, I think it's the same. Just like there's the wide receiver 2 tier, I think there's kind of like a big wide receiver 4 to wide receiver 5 tier. So no, I'm not going to pay a premium for Lazard when I feel basically just as good about someone a couple rounds later.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
So great stuff there. I think we kept that fairly civil, Dwayne. What do you have on the docket this week at PFF.com?
Updating all the tiers, all the ranks. You know, it's July, Ian. We're turning the page. Got to make sure everything's in tip top shape, because, like, moving forward, you know, I'll just be updating them like as we get news, you know, and then we'll just be dropping them back out there. So just getting those all ready to rock, you know, so folks can you know, continue using them for their best ball drafts, for their regular drafts. I'm trying to add notes into all of them about, hey, here's what I would do with them in best ball. Here's how I handle them in redraft. Trying not to make it too wordy though, you know, Ian. So. Working on that right now. Trying to make bullet points.
turn the page, ready to rock. You've been listening to Bob Seger before this, Dwayne? My goodness.
Maybe against the win. I don't know.
Little shout. I still have the team previews rolling up, and then we'll be done with those. You know, I'm happy we did them, but it will be kind of nice to be done as well. I'll get the rankings and all that stuff updated alongside Dwayne here soon enough. Before we get out of here, I have a completely unrelated stat I thought I'd bring up. I laugh sometimes, Wayne, because you know me, I'm a bit of a night owl, and I crack up sometimes when I open up my laptop and I see whatever the last thing I was looking at the night before. And last night it was Keyshawn Johnson playoff game logs, and get this stat line, this is wild. 1998 divisional round. Keyshawn Johnson still on the Jets. They're facing the Jaguars. He goes 9 catches, 121 receiving yards, and a touchdown. Also has 28 yards on 2 carries and another rushing touchdown. Also recovered a fumble when I believe their quarterback got picked, so he got the ball back. And then, Dwayne, to cap it off, he intercepted the Hail Mary at the end of the game. Receiving touchdown, rushing touchdown, fumble recovery, 1 interception. Keyshawn Johnson, what a great day to be great.
How Vinny cool Testaverde versus Mark Brunell.
Ooh, nailed it. What a game, man.
Keyshawn. Yeah, that was a game. That was a big game. Just throw me the damn ball, he said. That was the title of his book.
Throw him the damn ball. Like, that's the thing about diva wide receivers. Like, they want the ball more. I appreciate a player wanting the football. That's a good thing. You know, there's right ways to say it and stuff, but they want to go out there and win. They want to make plays, Dwayne. Can anyone, any one of us judge them for that? No, we can't.
And they had, who else do? Wayne Krabet.
Oh, Wayne. No gloves, right?
Yeah, that was the teammate.
What a savage, man. Imagine having that much confidence in your hands. You don't even wear gloves.
Yeah, back then, like, it was a little more normal. But nowadays, like, it's such a disadvantage because, like, basically, if it touches your glove, it's an automatic catch nowadays. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's they're super sticky.
Who's the most prominent guy still that doesn't wear gloves? Like Dawson Knox? But even, like, I feel like when you're a blocker, you might want to, like, kind of feel the jersey. It's a little bit different for that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, what wideout actually doesn't wear gloves right now? I know there has to be one, but I can't.
Fade them. Find out who it is and fade them. That's our analysis.
We're going to go study the drop rates.
Okay, before we talk about bullshit for the next 15 minutes, wrap this one up. Thank you, as always, for tuning in. And just, you know, small apology for this being out a little bit later, but vacation stuff, figured was not too much was going to change. And yeah, out a little bit later, but whatever. Thank you guys for tuning in, as always. For Dwayne, I'm Ian. It's been the PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. And until next time, take care.